Among the books that never leave my nightstand, anything by Mary Carr. The Liar's Club, her memoir of growing up the daughter of an alcoholic father and mother raped by a babysitter. The New York Times' Michiko Kakutani called it one of the most dazzling and moving memoirs in years. Then had to find more words to describe Mary's Lit, about her own alcoholism and recovery and conversion to Catholicism. Well, now Mary Carr has a new poetry collection. It's also memoir, and our talk about it may not be suitable for all ears. It includes a poem dedicated to the late and lionized writer David Foster Wallace. His biographer, D.T. Max, says Foster Wallace's opus, Infinite Jest, was written just to impress Mary Carr. But in their brief relationship in the 90s, he abused her, then stalked her. He killed himself in 2008. Her poems about him sear the eyes. But he is just a small part of this book. There's more on Texas, New York, her relationship with God. Mary Carr's new collection is Tropic of Squalor. She's also a professor of literature at Syracuse University. Mary, good to talk to you again.
Hey, Miss Robin. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm going to admit, at the risk of looking stupid, that we wanted to talk to you for you. We didn't even know you'd had a volatile relationship with David Foster Wallace.
I had a relationship. He had the volatile part. One reason I finally spoke up about the violence is I have so many young women who write things that I read. They imagine that I could never be in a situation with somebody who is violent. And I've got to just say, after 20 years of silence about it, at a certain point, I feel like I was complicit with somebody who beat my ass and was a torment. I felt awful when he died. I thought it was terrible. But I've been a writer before he was born. You know, some people consider me a footnote in the biography of this guy who's seen as this sort of sainted sage who tragically could not live in this wicked world. And he just happens to be a guy who was brutal to me.
Yeah. You say you were complicit, but the literary world was complicit. His biographer was complicit. David Foster Wallace threw a table at you, threw you out of the car in a strange neighborhood.
Those aren't the worst things he did. I mean, the worst thing he did was climb up the side of my house onto my bedroom balcony and also follow my son home when my son was 5 and also try to buy a gun to kill my husband. And the biographer had saw letters where these things are discussed. It's not like this stuff was not known.
And treated it as something that was dramatic about his
personality. I think what D.T. Max said about it was that it made his violence made him more, quote unquote, fascinating. You know, I just reading stuff from the Me Too movement and seeing so many young women in my office who carry so much shame. And like every other woman, I blamed myself and I was going to, you know, fix it. And I was, you know, it's a very common saga. I had a lot of suicides in my life. And my mother was suicidal or claimed she was. Now I realize she was homicidal. But it's something, you know, is a bad, sad part of my past that I've only recently sort of come forward with. And it was, I was kind of scolded by a handful of people about it because it was seen as though I were being unkind or something, which is what happens to a lot of women. But I've got to say, so many young women reached out to me online who had been hit in the face by him or lied to or students of his he slept with that I am glad I spoke up.
Well, one of the poems begins, "I hope you've been taken up by Jesus." And so we'll let people read them. What else are you saying with these poems? Lots about your dad.
My dad worked at an oil refinery, but also in the oil fields. Yes, ma'am. No, I think it's, for me, the book was sort of like, Tropic of Squalor was the joke name we had for my hometown, which was this swampy little backwater in East Texas where there's flaming industrial towers and snakes and alligators and, you know, the Ku Klux Klan had fish fries on Sundays. And it was a kind of hell for me. It was a kind of inferno. I was a sensitive, dorky kid with my head in a book. And I feel like the book is, in a way, about a journey out of darkness into the light.
I'm just reading one line. 3 gas stations in this town, now chemo centers, so you needn't drive to Houston. those oil fields and the cancers that are there. And
honestly, yeah. the cancer rate in my hometown, it looks like Chernobyl. The number of people I know, I mean, I had two friends die of leukemia before I was in the sixth grade. And it is true that they turn these gas stations into chemo centers. It's just so strange.
A lot here about your relationship with God.
I am a prayer, Miss Robin. I pray. Even somebody kind of dared me, you know, why don't you pray every day for 30 days and see if your life gets better? I don't know that it always changes things, but I know that it kind of always changes me. And sometimes I change things. It's not like the magic eight ball where the thing floats up to the surface. But sometimes I get a very quiet leaning kind of in the middle of my chest, and something I've been gnawing on or worrying about, it just kind of vanishes, or the bubble gets in the middle somehow, so I'm able to make a decision about something. So people always ask me, what does the voice of God sound like? So I wrote this poem called The Voice of God that opens with like the kind of thing God says to me. Sadly, I never get the lottery ticket number, but here it goes. 90% of what's wrong with you could be cured with a hot bath, says God through the manhole covers. But you want magic. To win the lottery you never bought a ticket for. Tenderly, the monks chant, embrace the suffering. The voice never panders, offers no five-year plan, no long-term solution, no edicts from a cloudy white beard hooked over ears. It is small and fond and local. Don't look for your initials in the geese honking overhead, or to see through the glass even darkly. It says the most obvious stuff. Like, put down that gun. You need a sandwich.
By the way, is that literal?
Oh, no, I've never had a gun and gone out. There's a reason I don't own a firearm.
Well, but I wonder there when you say this voice of God is coming up like steam from the manholes. Really, as you walk through New York, are you hearing God?
Well, Robin, most of the time I'm not such a nice person. If you see me on the subway and the air conditioning is out, like somebody is screaming or some guy is going to the bathroom on the right in front of you, if you just say, you know, God bless the guy going to the bathroom right in front of me, it's amazing what happens. It's literally you can become sort of curious about somebody. So I actually do walk around a lot of times. Because otherwise, I'm just such a jerk. I just think, for me, prayer is like a part of a whole series of psychological corrections I need.
Well, there's much of that here. There's just little observations. Discomfort, food for the unwhole. I think a Whole
Foods.
I
mean, if you've been in Whole Foods, you've been in a long line. It's interesting because nobody believes in God, but everybody believes paying $7 for an apple will keep you from dying.
And everybody believes in their phone.
That's right.
And so you have each head bent over a shining phone. Through these squares of light, we tap, tap with opposable thumbs and don't see what's all around us.
Right. Behind us stretch rows of iced Gulf shrimp, New Zealand lamb, the Russian sturgeons, glistening black eggs, dewy orchids, misty from Brazil. So much from so many for so few, and at such spectacular cost. And yet we cannot lift our heads from our hands to look around. We cannot stop ourselves. Each face hung forward off the neck of the corpse each self devours.
Ugh.
It doesn't make us look so good.
No, I'll never look at a line at Whole Foods the same way again. Mary Carr, so you've been in a certain kind of passage. What does putting this out do for you?
Well, you know, Robin, I'll be honest with you. I feel like I'm, you know, in my 60s, and I feel like until the past 18 months, I feel like I was like this. I've been a feminist since I was 8 years old, but I feel like I've been an Uncle Tom. I feel like all my life I have pandered to men in a way that I wasn't aware of, and that I have totally changed my mind about what's going on in the world. When people used to tell me there was a rape culture, you know, it's not a new idea that it's bad to rape people, but you know what? Robin, it's kind of a new idea that it's bad to rape people. Mm-hmm. It kind of is, and there are terrible things that happened. I was raped as a child. There are terrible things that happen to children. But I'm thinking about when I was 21 years old, I came to New York City, and I was in a room with many of the great poets, many of the great writers I wanted to meet. I had a great teacher, a guy named Etheridge Knight. James Wright was there, and Galway Connell, and Alice Walker was there, and Denise Levertov, and I was there babysitting for Etheridge's kids. And Galway Connell, who's teaching at Princeton, comes into the kitchen and puts my hand on his unit. And I left. I left that the room. So it's not just the rape. It's the number of times you're driven from a place. You don't have an opportunity you should have simply because of your gender.
That's Mary Carr. Her latest collection of poetry is Tropic of Squalor. Mary, thank you so much, as always.
Thanks for having me, Miss Robin.